It's Monday, the 11th of November. Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. In this hour, we'll start off with an open discussion of issues in the news and beyond. It's our Roundtable panel. Joining us this morning, WAMC's Alan Chartok, political consultant Libby Post, and University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo. Later in the program, we'll meet Tuesdays with Maury author Mitch Albom and talk about his new book and his visit to our region later this week. We'll get a book show preview with novelist Ann Perry and find out about the Klezmatics gig at the Mahewi. We'll find out about the Lung Cancer Alliance's upcoming Shine a Light on Lung Cancer Vigil. Plus, as the 50th anniversary of JFK's assassination approaches, we'll talk with journalist Richard Reeves on the Kennedy years. The Roundtable begins after news. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable, or welcome to the Roundtable. We've only been here for 9 minutes, so you haven't missed that much. Good morning. We have a complete panel before us, and we're very excited to get going on the topics of the day. And hey, Alan's back.
Yay.
Did you miss us?
I did miss you, and but I and occasionally I would see the letters that came in. Criticizing all of us for one thing or the other.
It was love, too.
There's no question. There's no question.
Yeah.
The one that I particularly enjoyed was Rosemary's commentary on what it's like to be on a plane.
Don't get me started.
And she left one out, which is Roselle's favorite, a 300-pounder sitting next to her, imperializing on her seat coming over the line. It's not their fault that they weigh that much. Of course, I want to make that quite clear, but they really have to sort of squinch in or buy a seat in first class.
Or the airlines could give you more than 3 inches.
Well, that's not going to happen.
No, it's not, because they're making them smaller now.
But anyway, Greece was terrific. and we went to Thessaloniki, and that's a great city. I don't know if, Rosemary, you've been everywhere, right?
I've been there.
Yeah, it's a terrific city. It's got a great waterfront, a terrific story to tell, and some very horrific parts of it.
Right.
50,000 Jews were rounded up.
Right.
And exterminated. It was at one point there were more Jewish people in Thessaloniki than any other group of people. So it was really something. And we went to many major sites, including the tomb of Philip, the father of Alexander the Great.
Cool.
Wow.
And it
not
was
done that. That's very cool.
They say it's the second most important archaeological site in the world. It's really quite something what they've done with it. So really great.
Good trip.
Well, welcome back. We missed you.
Joe.
It's very nice to have you back in the mix here. We should also mention today is Veterans Day, so we're all here and we honor our veterans and we thank them very much. And in just about 2 hours, there'll be a parade in the front of the building, and we're very excited about that as well.
There will be, and it's quite a parade for those people who have never been on Central Avenue to watch the Veterans Parade come out. We all go out in front and watch and cheer.
Cool.
And they deserve to be cheered.
And we'll have coverage, and we'll have more on Veterans Day coming up on Midday Magazine today at noon, hosted by Brian Shields. And
I like the picture of President Obama. It's circulating on internet where he went up to a soldier who's quite elderly and infirm now and sitting in a wheelchair, and the guy insisted on standing up. And Obama says, "No, no, you stay." He goes, "No, you're the president." Very cool. President helped him
That's
out.
That's great. Glad you told that story.
So cool. All right, let us talk about what's going on. And, of course, the most horrific and just horrible story that, unfortunately, we have to talk about is what's happening in the Philippines, a devastating typhoon. There's a lot of things to talk about. I mean, the issue itself, I know I heard Alan talking about this earlier this morning about, obviously, you know, we look at global warming and these stories and these storms and how they proliferate, but also we look at the death toll, and I mean those numbers are all over the place. We don't know
really,
and I've seen numbers as low as 1,200, and I've seen numbers as high as 20,000.
Right. Wow,
and I mean, let's face it. any loss of life is devastating. But so, I mean, I think, and in fairness, to me, in fairness, we're guessing at this point because we don't know because there is such devastation. We can only assume.
The latest official figure was 1,000 dead, 300 missing. That was this morning.
And although I've seen many reports that 10,000 maybe in one town.
Right. Because they just don't know.
And they don't know and they can't even get there to find out. I think anyone who saw the radar and the of that storm moving in and you see this little tiny island and you see this monster storm and almost the eye of the storm was about the same size as
the island
itself. Yeah. Devastated.
But, you know, I have a question for our journalism professor here, Rosemary. You know, I get the feeling that when catastrophes happen abroad, people killing other people, large numbers of people, you don't get the same coverage that you do when it happens here. And so it has to be really, really big to get this kind of attention. And
now, if I can just leap on to that, because the first numbers are starting to come out Saturday night. And I went to CNN. I went to MSNBC. The 24-hour news channels. They were all running repeats of, I don't know, whatever. And the Weather Channel didn't even have it. And I was thinking to myself, well, obviously, if this was exactly what you said, Alan, if this was in Florida, if this was even in Puerto Rico, if this was anywhere else other than on the other side of the world, we no doubt would be hearing about this and have coverage. But there was nothing.
Well,
nothing.
There's a couple of things that have gone wrong as far as coverage of the story. First is that it seemed like it was okay. The tsunami hit, and it was just like Katrina. It was like, oh, we survived it. Not that bad. And then it's actually the after surge that also happened in Japan and the tsunami there. And it's that after surge that just knocked the bejesus out of the entire country. And it happens on a weekend. That's number two. So you're talking about skeletal staffs anywhere. Number three, it's in a place I travel the whole world. I do not know where this is. I had to look it up on a map. It's extremely remote, hard to get to. So you're not going to have a lot of great pictures or coverage. And then the fourth thing is what you said. We don't know these people. You know, I never heard of it before today. So, now it doesn't exist. I didn't know whatever did exist. So, it is hard to drum up the kind of empathy that we would have if it were certainly Florida, but Puerto Rico or Cuba as well.
But Joe made me think of something else, and that is every once in a while one of those, you say Puerto Rico, but every once in a while a hurricane hits Cuba.
Yeah,
And then you have de minimis coverage also.
Yes.
But there's, it's for many of the same reasons. There are so few U.S. outlets there. It's hard to get news. There's hiding of news. I don't think that's the case here. But, it's quite striking. It's a huge weather event.
And Vietnam took
a huge hit, too,
which is, is being overshadowed by this in many cases, but also devastating storm there as well. And I don't know. I assume we're going to start because I see what you're saying, Alan. But we have not seen the immediate within 24 hours. Even with Haiti, we saw within 24 hours we were going to have the Red Cross telethon, and this is where you could give, and this is where you could help, and all of the websites had the thing. I haven't seen any of that yet.
Mm.
Nothing, and we're talking potentially tens of thousands of people, which is really devastating. And we can't make much out of this.
And this happened in Pakistan. Remember the earthquake there, 4 years ago now?
Right.
And the UN could not drum up humanitarian aid to help. Again, it was tens of thousands of people could not drum up the aid. We almost have we're getting immunity to it. We don't want to help as much. We don't feel it as much. We're just blocking it out.
Mm. I think it's also the other factor.
The other, definitely.
You know, it's the other factor. And, you know, you can see that kind of coverage here. You know, you see journalistic, criticism and media criticism about how, and I mean, this is sort of an analogy. A white girl goes missing. The entire media sphere lights up. Mm-hmm. A black girl goes missing. That's not the case. And so, that again is a sense of the other. And it's not my kid. It's not my It's not a potential of who we are as affluent people in this society. And the Philippines is the other in a very real way.
Well, it's interesting. We do have Filipino immigration.
Sure, we do.
This country,
right.
But I think
lots
that has a lot. Yeah. I think that has a lot to do with it. I mean, you know, Upper West Side of Manhattan are Haitians, and tremendous numbers of Haitians in this country, and that immigration pattern. So that may have something to do with it also.
I know. If something new and horrible had happened to 10,000 people in the Philippines, I think we would have had more coverage. I listened to the coverage for hours on CNN yesterday, and it's the same old wording. It could have been Japan. It could have been Pakistan. It's really hard to come up with new stuff. Oh, it's horrible. It's another big giant storm.
The story is climate change, and that's what nobody wants to deal with.
Yeah, there was one line about it in the, I think it was the Washington Post. No, the, I'm sorry, the New York Times story.
Right.
So one line in it. It's too early to judge if this had anything to do with climate change. Well, we ought to be thinking about that and writing
about
it. I don't
know what else it could have been.
I've not always been the biggest Andrew Cuomo fan, but I can tell you, he said something that really stuck in my mind. He said, yes, we have these thousand-year storms every month.
Let's take a break. When we come back, I'm going to go ahead on actually another story that came up because it ties into exactly what Libby was talking about. And we will do that right after we take this short break. Remember, you can always join in Roundtable at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to our Roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue. Alan Chartok is here, Libby Post and Rosemary Armeo, and we welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We've had a very somber tone for the first half of the show, and so we'll move on to another subject, which isn't... it's a little more procedural, I guess, of when it comes to a news organization apologizing for something that they reported on the air. We touched on this last week, but yesterday, last night, Laura Logan delivered an apology on 60 Minutes for this story that they did last month on Benghazi. Laura Logan was scheduled to deliver a report on Sunday 60 Minutes about disabled veterans who climb mountains. Instead, she appeared in front of the news magazine's trademark black backdrop and issued an apology. Ms. Logan said that Dylan Davies, one of the main sources for a two-week-old piece about the attack on the American diplomatic mission in Benghazi, Libya, had misled the program staff when he gave an account of rushing to the compound the night the attack took place. It was a mistake to include him in our report. For that, we are very sorry, according to Laura Logan. The apology lasted only 90 seconds and revealed nothing new about why CBS had trusted Mr. Davies, who appeared on the program under the pseudonym of Morgan Jones. Off camera, CBS executives were left to wonder how viewers would react to the exceptionally rare correction. It is important to note, I think, although I have been noticing that this isn't often mentioned, which is this comes out of a book that was written under the pseudonym of Morgan Jones, which was found to be false and was pulled by a major publisher, was pulled off of the shelves and no longer being sold. Which is an extraordinary move for publishers to do.
It was pulled because of these new revelations.
Because of these revelations.
Not like it was pulled and 60 Minutes went ahead anyway. No, that's not what happened.
No. So it was not just 60 Minutes who was duped by this story and by this individual. So it does bring up the question, as we said, of while veteran television journalists spent the weekend debating whether the now discredited Benghazi report would cause long-term damage to the esteemed news magazine's brand, some media critics joined the liberal advocacy group Media Matters for America and calling for CBS to initiate an independent investigation of missteps in the reporting process.
Joe, one thing that occurs to me, I want to hear from our other wonderful panelists here, but one thing that occurs to me is the vehemence of the New York Times reporting on CBS's troubles. I really scratched my head and I said, God, it must be wonderful to be perfect and to never have had a major screw up at the New York Times. What was the name of that woman who got all the State Department?
Well, Judith,
Judith Miller,
and then Jason Blair,
and all few,
but if you read the piece in the Times today, it's really mean spirited,
which is twofold. Yeah, by the way, it's written by two reporters: one a television reporter, Bill Carter, and the other one Brian Shelter. Stelter, thank you. I hate bifocals. I hate them. I can't.
Try trifocals. Maybe it'll help.
I had to give them back.
Tangent,
I can't say anything.
Tangent.
Oh, sorry. Bad. Okay. Anyway, you have a
TV guy and a newspaper.
You're right, a journalist.
This is not the first vehement correction, like scolding correction that the New York Times has done on competitors, too. They came out about a month ago against the McClatchy Organization, which had written a story about the NSA. Mm-hmm. And the Times came back with this scolding thing about, now our enemies have changed the way they communicate, and it's your fault. It's McClatchy's fault for stories that they had. It was crazy. And they got a lot of criticism for that. So there's a number of things going on here. We eat our own. When someone makes a mistake, we go crazy about it, which I think is good and healthy. This is a story, Benghazi, that is split between conservatives and liberals, and that always brings like horrible biases and distortions to a story. If I were the Republican leadership, I'd be really upset. I think this ruins Benghazi as an issue that can now be politically damaging because it's so screwed up. Who knows what's true anymore? This only adds to it. And this is the kind of mistake that has been made before and will continue to be made, because if you are truly a psychological liar, you just want to do it, you can trick news media. The AP won a Pulitzer Prize several years ago for coverage of war atrocities by Americans during the Korean War, and it was largely based on one witness who turned out to be just like this guy, totally making it up. Interesting thing, I'm sorry, and then I'll shut up, is that Laura Logan, the reporter involved here, is the same reporter who came into fame last year because she was publicly gang raped while covering the demonstrations in Egypt. So this is she has not had a lot of good exposure lately.
But I think this,
and she's an experienced reporter. She is a good reporter.
This is not going to hurt 60 Minutes in the long run. It will not. I also think it's a very complicated story. I had to read it two or three times to fully understand who is on what side. That the conservative.
This is an anti-Obama, pro-conservative story.
Right,
and
what the conservative position was on this one, and so this is a. This is all tough stuff for people to understand, and as a result, if they don't really understand it, go away. They've tried the Republicans have tried to play the Benghazi card again and again and again, and it hasn't worked. And I don't think it's going to work now. Yeah.
There's also the when you talk about this gentleman and his report. There was specifically 60 Minutes. 60 Minutes has done this before with the Dan Rather affair and his story and so forth, and having to apologize for that, which seems to be very different than this case. And I don't know if any of you watch The Newsroom.
Wait. Why is it very different than this case? It was based on documents that proved to be faked.
Yes.
This was a witness who
one
was
witness
fake.
Who I mean, because it seemed to be one was CBS's sole investigation. And this man seemed to have he had a whole book agent and everything else that were going around. I mean, the story was widespread.
No, it seems to me the two stories are very similar in that you're not fully sourcing people.
Oh, absolutely.
Or documents
the mistake being made of that you don't have the confirmation.
The most interesting comment I've heard on this was by Mary Mapes, who was a producer of the Dan Rather. The Dan Rather piece you're talking to that made George W. Bush look like he had skipped out of service, and she said much the same thing, that this is, you feel horrible thinking about, oh my gosh, that could have been me doing that same error. Journalists should not be happy when they see competitors in a situation like this. And if it doesn't hurt 60 Minutes, Alan, it could be because the audience thinks we make a lot of mistakes anyway.
Hmm. You think because the audience thinks that 60 Minutes makes a lot of mistakes anyway?
Journalists make mistakes all the time anyway. It's no big deal for them.
Nah, I think we get exercised about this when it's really bad. And we can see why it was really bad.
Right.
And when it gets complicated, it's too much. Yeah. It's just too much. What?
Well, it's just, there's a couple of things that are just, you know, rattling around in my head. And one is that, you know, CBS 60 Minutes has always been seen as sort of more to the left of center than to the right. Yeah. And so this was an opportunity to show, well, to get a little right-wing cred, you know, and it came back to bite them in the butt. And the Times is clear where it stands, which is left of center, and I think is probably part of this is their, you know, in the back of people's heads or their emotional reaction of they shouldn't be leaning left, right to center. They should be right to center, you know, left to center where we are because we're quote unquote right, which, mm-hmm. you know, thinking people do agree that they are usually right. You know, and the other part of it is it could be, I mean, you know, I remember when we were in school, it was the PAC journalism stuff. Well, sure. The Times didn't break the story. And so they didn't break it.
They didn't break it.
They didn't break it. It wasn't their spin. And so somebody else got something for it. But I just want to go back to something.
So they were jealous just to make it clear?
Yeah.
Our competitors screwed up.
Right. Yeah. I don't think Laura Logan got bad exposure from the incident in Egypt.
You mean the rape?
Yes. I don't think that.
I think she covered it really courageously.
Right,
she came forward with it.
But you said before it was bad exposure. I don't think that should be seen.
If you'll remember, when that first was reported, NPR reporter made a comment about her looks and how she was asking for it and ended up getting fired. There were many, many comments made about her. Why was she there? How she dressed?
But that's blaming
the victim. Terrible exposure. It was, yes.
Terrible exposure. And then she came. From that perspective,
Correct. That's what I meant.
Not reflected on her, you're saying.
Right. Not her, you know, that was just blaming the victim. You know, she's a credible, good journalist
Absolutely.
Who has come back. And, you know, look, everybody gets duped, you know. And what really burns me is this story, if it was on Fox News, would be gospel.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And nobody would bat an eye over there.
Well, and when after this story, as this article points out, that after the story hit, very quickly Fox News seized on it and mm-hmm. used it as their example of...
Because they really don't do anything journalistic to begin with.
No.
So.
Well, even worse are the Republicans who are saying, well, so the story is wrong, but we still want a full accounting.
Right, yeah.
And they're still using it. I mean, that to me is just like, kid, stop.
Yeah. The only thing they're going to have for the midterms is the health care.
Yeah. And well, that, they have a little bit of material with that, Libby.
Yeah, there is that. So.
Well, let's talk about that. We'll take a break and we will return. And everything coming full circle. This is very nice. You're leading me right down the road here, folks. Thank you. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to the
roundtable.
You know, sometimes this show just gets in the way of our conversation.
Oh,
in the
man.
I know.
That's too bad.
We've never done that before. I haven't. You probably do it all the time.
Well, I mean, it's...
No, we've done it before.
We get carried away, and it's fun. We get talking about other stuff. Let's go, as I mentioned, I wanted to talk about, because you brought this up, as far as Obamacare and health care. And with elections looming, Obamacare rattling Democratic nerves. This from CNN and CNN.
Elections looming. Okay, let's stop right there.
Elections glooming. if they get this thing fixed by the end of the year, show progress, have good numbers, it'll all be a distant memory.
Just like the shutdown, we all forgot about it.
Yeah, it'll all be a distant memory by the time, elections roll around. They might want to consider, not necessarily, I don't know, delaying or not penalizing people because of this. I think that's what the best thing to do. I wouldn't delay signing up, but don't penalize people because of what happened. And you know, they just need to get this thing fixed. And again, I will say this, which is what I have been saying all along. If the states had done what they were supposed to do and set up their own exchanges, which was the plan, we wouldn't be in this morass. The feds were not expecting to set up the exchanges for as many states as they had to do it. And so, of course, there's going to be this problem. And I'm sure people are out there saying, I'm just an apologist for all of this. But when you look at it from a technology point of view, you know, it took a good year, year and a half to set up the New York Exchange, you know, and it's going to take, it takes time to do this. And if the states had done what they were supposed to do, we wouldn't necessarily be in this mess.
So you're just an apologist for all
I
of
am.
This. I have maintained all along that head should roll, and my choice would be Sebelius. I think, yes, it does take a long time, but they knew this was coming. They took no steps to get out in front of it, to say we can't
right.
get this up. We're going to have a delay. I think Obama might have used that as a bargaining chip with the Republicans. I think he still might. And I'd like to see him be the leader I voted for. Get those insurance company people together, and let's have a meeting about what the hell they're doing. Okay? We're not seeing any of that.
A million Americans have gotten the cancellation notices in the mail.
Right.
So what do you do about that? And how do you counter that?
You force the insurance companies not to cancel their policies.
Yeah.
I mean,
let's be
and
a president.
They can do that. Yes, they can. If they can stop a strike, they can stop that.
Well, I'm old enough to remember President Kennedy.
Yep.
Bringing the steel guys into the room and jawboning with them and saying, you are not going to raise prices. And guess what? They walked out with their tails between their legs and they didn't do it.
Yeah.
Well, and it's taking them to the woodshed. But will that happen?
Well, that's what has
to happen. There's no signs of it so far. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of hoping that we'll get things fixed. And you know, that's why I can't sit here and say, oh, Obama's a good man and a good leader and smart and so blah, blah, blah. No, he has really screwed up.
Well, can you project yourself?
Bring it around.
Rosemary, can you project yourself into his place?
Yeah, I would hate to be in it. I would never run for president. I think this is horrible. But that's why he gets paid those big bucks.
Well,
oh,
yeah,
wait,
big
it's
bucks.
Not that
yeah.
big.
I mean, come on. It's not that big. And the headaches are
immense.
Insurmountable.
Yeah. No, no, no. It's not like I'm gleeful about this. But he needs to act boldly, and I believe he's capable of it.
We've seen him do it, but it does come back. We're going to hear from many of our people from the sort of center-left who say, you see, this is what you get when you don't do the right kind of health care program.
Right. Single-payer.
We see that all the time.
Well, I agree with that, too. All that capital, all the political capital he expended on a program that stinks. It's not what liberals want. It's not what the country needs.
It's better than nothing, and you put 40 million people on the rolls.
And that's what we said. Okay, it's better than nothing. It's a start, and now it's better than nothing, but it's a big mess, but it's better.
But it's easier for us to sit here and play armchair politics because we all have health insurance, you know, and it's easy for us to say, well, he should be fixing this, and they are working on fixing it, but we also need to recognize there are 47 million people in this country walking around without health insurance, and there was just an announcement last week that Health and Human Services, the folks that, the portion of Health and Human Services that funds the federally qualified health centers, they're giving more money to open up more health centers because that's where these people are going to go.
So how come, here's my question to you guys, how come we don't hear more about the 40 million people? The reason is because they're basically poor.
Right.
And
right.
American politics is middle class politics, mm-hmm. and they do not point out successes that help poor people witness, you know, SNAP and anything mm-hmm. else you want to do.
They're the other, just like those people in the Philippines who are trying to get food and clean
and
water.
As Bill Maher pointed out, as is the president last night at the palace, you know, because he's black. And, you know, there was the whole idea of having a black president and what that means to certain elements of the society and why should we pay attention to him.
Okay, I'm missing
black.
That. I'm missing that, Libby. Because he's pissing off those of us who voted for him. I get that.
But you bring those insurance guys in and they're going to be like, why should we listen to
him? Oh, because he's the president of the United States.
I get
Come
that.
On.
But the fact of the matter is he's not as respected as he should be because of the color of his skin.
I'd have to see more proof than Bill Maher's. How do you say his
Bill Maher.
Maher. Bill Maher. Maher. Yeah, Maher. Bill Maher's just commentary.
I'm all over the place on this one. I don't like Bill Maher, but
it was a little crude.
I just think he's crude. He's good. Anyway, but I agree with you basically, Libby. I really
I'm so
do.
Glad.
I think you're right, and I think that Rosemary's wrong.
Go back to Greece.
Now your mother's going to ask you if he likes you or if you like him.
I love Rosemary.
Okay. We have time for one more story. I just want to mention
Let's go to Texas.
We'll go to Texas. I had mentioned that the book that was by Mr. Davies that was pulled, who was the guest on CBS, yes. Should be noted that is published by Threshold, which is a division of Simon & Schuster, which is owned by CBS.
We heard from about four people.
Oh,
yes.
My God.
So,
interesting. Yeah.
We'll make that that comment.
And once again, that curtain is being just jacked right up.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so let us go to Texas. What were we talking about in Texas? Remind me, Libby.
Oh, that the military, the National Guard won't let the gay couples register.
Military benefits. This is the
arrest.
That's right. Texas, one of six states, yes?
Yeah.
On the morning, this is Texas and five other states resisting processing benefits for gay couples.
And in the military.
So you go to the state. You go to the state facility, in other words, the National Guard, right?
And they're saying go
and
to the federal.
And they say you have to go 70 miles away to get your benefits.
Oh, you're one of those.
You're one of those couples.
Right. And they send you to the federal.
So you have to go 70 miles away to do it, and they're making it into a case of federalism.
They are refusing to comply with the Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel's order that gay spouses of National Guard members be given the same federal marriage benefits as heterosexual spouses.
Fine. This will go to the Supreme Court, because all the other states who have DOMA-type constitutional amendments who are doing this, it's going to show that there is no harm being done here.
You think that Supreme Court, I hope you're right, is going to do what's right here.
Well, I think it'll take a while to wend its way through, but
we
now have 15 states. Soon, Hawaii is going to be coming on board soon. That's going to be 16 states. I think you're going to see Virginia. I think there's going to be some other states that are going to come on board. By the time we get to 20 states in this country with legalized same-sex marriage, the tide is just going to be, you just can't stop it
anymore. Yeah, it's like, what they're doing is so wrong. And yet, I sort of admire how hard-headed and obnoxious it is. You can have your benefits, but you're going to
got to go 70 miles. Yeah. Separate but equal is not...
But
equal.
Also, we want to make sure that people vote for us because we're on the conservative side of the issue.
Yeah.
It has very little to do with the merits.
Yeah, so this is about whether or not Wendy, what's her name? Wendy Davis. Is going to come out in favor of this couple. I mean, that's part of it. I'm sure there's machinations going on behind the scenes. Let's do this, put her in a corner. Yeah. It'll make it more difficult for her to win, blah, blah, blah.
Right, you're exactly right. She's already come out in favor of gay marriage and gay rights.
Right.
So this will... Yeah, make her seem more extreme.
More extreme, right. And she's running against
context.
The Attorney General.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And he
and
so
Rick Perry may be running for
president.
For president again.
He needs to learn his ABCs first.
So on that note, we covered a lot of ground this morning. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. And we will continue with the roundtable. You're listening on WAMC.